You're listening to Well Now, Slate's podcast on health and wellness. I'm Maya Fallon.
And I'm Kavita Patel. All right, Maya, we're getting to the warmer months, and I'm going to be honest with you. This is a topic that I've been waiting to talk about, keeping our skin healthy. I'll even go for like skin that is passable in the mornings. And let me tell you, as a doctor, I'm going to do my plug. I know you and I both care about this topic. Skin, a lot of people forget about this, including hair and nails, is actually the body's largest organ. And it also is the most common type of cancer diagnosis, skin cancer, that is, according to the National Cancer Institute. And it's something that I worry about all the time. Every time I see like a new mole, and for all my dark colored skin friends out there, yes, you too, even though chances of getting skin cancer are lower, it still happens. So I care a lot about keeping our skin healthy, and I'm constantly slathering on sunscreen and chasing my kids around trying to do the same even when it's cloudy. So as we're all getting excited about warmer months and spending more time outside, Maya, I'm really looking forward to this topic and also curious about what other people are doing to take care of their skin.
Hear, hear to that, Kavita. I mean, I agree 100%. What gets me right now is the interwebs. TikTok, Instagram, they're a fire with influencers who are posting videos with all these claims about this new product and that new product, and they're so expensive. And they're claiming that it's what is 100% needed for good skincare. And the masses are just flocking the stores and following and buying things that I don't know, truthfully, if they actually need to be purchasing them.
If you haven't switched over to Korean skincare yet, what are you doing?
Flagging do's and don'ts.
All right, what is skin flooding? Is it legit? How do you do it?
Snail mucin is so hot right now.
I've been getting questions on how my skin is so clear, so here's my everyday skincare routine. So
I make sure. And from my perspective, as a mom who's got a tween, who's really susceptible to being influenced, all of this chatter has really led to this overpurchasing. She's out there, her friends are out there, teens and preteens, they're just swarming these stores. And they have these multi-step skincare routines that are truthfully just like way too rough for their young, developing skin.
The beauty brand Drunk Elephant recently came under fire for claims it's marketing its products designed for adults to kids. Its founder denied those accusations, but go to any Sephora or Ulta store, and you'll find kids shopping for their brightly packaged products, as well as other pricey skincare brands.
You know, it's become an obsession with teens and tweens, and this is a tech-savvy generation, so a lot of the influence is coming from social media, which then has some of us parents asking, what are the products they're using? Are they doing more harm than good?
And we've talked about this before in other podcasts, but there's definitely a hype factor. And we know from all hype factors that we ourselves, Maya, you and I have been susceptible to trying to buy some of these products, trying to get into these routines. My own sister, she's a dermatologist, and she's talked to me about these routines. So what's actually worth the hype? And who's just trying to get your money? And how do you decide what the difference is? So I'm excited this week. Our guest is a dermatologist who will share with us the most important factors in not only maintaining healthy skin, which is a high priority, but also really what to do about all the hype. So before we get to that, Maya, I'm dying to know. I want to ask you how you go about keeping your skin so beautiful and healthy for yourself and your family. I've always been a little jealous.
Okay, I have a lot of help from my dermatologist. I experienced some hormonal acne in my third decade of life and absolutely reached out for support. So I do take a daily prescription that helps my skin. And in addition to that, I mean, that's full disclosure there. I actually wash my face very simply with soap and water. And then I do have a routine of products that are made from another derm friend. And really, vitamin C is the base of what I do, plus sunscreen. So it's a combination of some, you know, a little bit of medicine, prescription medicine that helped me out, and then also some great topical stuff. What about you, Kavita?
Oh, I have so much to say about this, and our podcast isn't long enough, so I'm going to try to keep it short. And I'm just going to say that I was that teen that had horrible, like, cystic acne. I was actually one of the first people to start Accutane before it even got a black box label which now people still use it, but it's under a lot more restriction. And so skin to me has been this just ongoing, never-ending nightmare. Ironically, my sister's a cosmetic dermatologist, so I'm going to tell you what she taught me, and it's something that it'll be interesting to just see if our guest echoes, or maybe he'll say that's crazy. So the first things first, I drink a ton of water. I will say that people who tell me like I look younger than my age or my skin looks great, it's water, 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 water. So that's something everybody should and could do. And then the second thing I do is I try never to go to bed with makeup or, you know, dirt. So washing my face. I'm just like you, Maya.
Hear, hear to that, Kavita. Say it again. No makeup in your bed.
No makeup in your bed. No makeup in your bed. And I'm not fancy about what I use to wash my face. I know we're not product placing here, but I do just use like drugstore CeraVe, like a kind of a pure... And nothing that's too sticky, nothing too gritty, just something that can get off the makeup. And I'll even do a makeup removal and then wash my face. And then if I'm feeling super prepped, because my sister's a dermatologist, this is like the little tricks of the trade. It's called the grass regimen. And so if people do have the potential, it does cost a little bit to get some of these products, but it's growth factor, grass, G for growth factor, R for a retinoid or a retinol. These are all over the counter. A for an antioxidant. S for a sun serum or sun protection. And then the second S is for sometimes people need additional specialty products if they've got like aging spots or certain eczema or rosacea, all very common skin problems. So it's that GRAS. And I think the vitamin C that you mentioned fits into that A antioxidant category, by the way, Maya. So she recommends kind of even going in that order because how you apply the skin product and in what order actually matters, which is why the last S is really for sunscreen. So that's my final tip for any listeners. You are never too young to start sunscreen, and it is never too dark outside to have sunscreen on. So my seven, oh, and I should say this for my brown and black friends, your skin is never too dark where you don't need sunscreen. It's not just for light skin people. It's for all skin. So
100%.
This is my public service announcement. And what I try to tell patients, which sometimes they're a little like, wait a minute, you're not a dermatologist, but I say, look, I'm just imparting my knowledge to you. You can do it with it what you want. So that's my regimen. That's my tea.
I love that, Kavita. I have to tell you the other thing. So I didn't fully disclose. Have you ever heard of skin cycling? That's the other thing that I do.
I've heard of it.
It's something that I've been doing. So it's I use a retinol one night and then I use, well, actually two nights. Uh-huh. And then I use an exfoliation and then I give my skin a break.
Ah, so kind of off and on a little bit.
Yeah, so it's off and on. Yeah, and I found that it's really helpful and that my skin doesn't get dried out ever or too greasy and It keeps this really nice balance.
I think I naturally skin cycle by being lazy about things probably because I'll forget to do things or if I'm just really tired one night and I just wash my face. That's all I do. That's all I get to. So that's probably my version of skin cycling. But I imagine, Maya, because you're a dietitian, you get a lot of questions. I've been dying to know about how you think about skin and skin care in your work as a dietitian.
Oh, absolutely. Especially the tween and teen crowd that comes to us. That is like a great on-ramp for hydration because they're all like, I want to have good skin. What should I do? And just like you said, hydration, we absolutely talk about hydration from water, but we also talk about hydration from food because you can get a significant amount of your daily hydration from the foods that you eat. And this is where we enter fruits and vegetables, specifically the ones that have a high water content. And so when we're talking about hydration, we talk to people about hydrating in relation to their physical activity, where they live, as well as their own body composition. And so I know we've all heard like, okay, 8 glasses of water per day, but it can really vary by individual. And so we go through all the medications and supplements that people are taking. We go through physical activity. We go through time of year. And believe it or not, Kavita, sometimes we can get to like 4 liters of water per day as someone's recommendation.
I believe it. I try to drink about 4 liters a day. I actually try to gauge like, all right, how often, and I get one of those. I have it right in front of me. This is a 40-ounce, one of these 40-ounce water bottles. So I'll try to make sure I get to like at least 3 or 4 of those. So not always 4 liters, but it's a lot. But it's if you think about how much of our body mass is water and how much of our earth is water, it all makes sense that there's a lot of water going back and forth.
Agreed. The other thing that we do is we talk about eating foods that are supportive of gut health. And I know that it's like a wild trend that we hear, but really when people eat a variety of foods, especially plant foods, it can change the makeup of the gut, meaning that there's better bacteria in there.
What's one food that you might say would be good to add into our regimen? Is it like an antioxidant, like a blueberry? I've just been curious, like what would be one thing, you know, I hear a lot about these acai things and wonder, should I add that? Is that better for my skin? Are there things you would add that could be just better sources of some of these vitamins and antioxidants?
Yeah. So I would actually say a resistant starch, because I would be thinking about something that's going to ferment further down the GI tract. And that's really what's going to build up those short chain fatty acids. And what the research says in terms of skin health is that that's where you get the most, quote unquote, bang for your buck. And so I'm talking about things like plantains, Jerusalem artichokes, the almonds, if people don't have nut allergies, also have some resistant starch. You know, I think that that's where I would be leaning. Oats have some resistant starch, things like that.
Wow. I don't think I've ever classified any of that as resistant starch. This is great. I can tell this is not just going to be a great episode, but it's going to be an incredible, incredible education for all of us, I'm sure. Let's actually bring another voice into this conversation. When we come back, we'll speak with dermatologist Adarsh Vijay Mudgill, who will share his insights on skincare. Stick around. Welcome back. You're listening to Well Now. I'm Kavita Patel.
And I'm Maya Feller. And joining us to talk all things skin health is Dr. Adarsh Vijay Mudgill. He's a board-certified dermatologist and a dermatopathologist based here in New York City. In fact, he is my derm. So we go way, way back. He's also the host of his own show, the Dr. Mudgill Podcast. Dr. Mudgill, thank you for joining us here on Well Now.
Well, thank you for having me.
We're so excited that you're here. And Adarsh, we actually love to start off the show by asking this question. How do you define wellness?
That's a good question. That's kind of like, how do you define success question?
Now. Oh, yes.
That's right.
So wellness to me really kind of boils down to fitness in many ways. And I don't mean just being like fit, like muscular and, you know, being able to run a marathon type of stuff. But, you know, what I found is when wellness really is when you're have a life that's kind of dedicated and revolves around fitness, which really ties into like nutrition, eating well, which then ties into sleeping well, then ties into like mental health. You're kind of like firing on all cylinders, but you know, the body is your temple, you know, and I think wellness really begins with respecting your body, treating it well. And that means exercising, means eating well, means sleeping well, means, you know, being attentive to your mindset, you know, all of that sort of, but it all starts, you know, with the gut.
Yes. Yes, it sure does. It all starts with the gut. I love that. Okay. So let's get to the heart of our conversation for today. We're going to talk about skin health. We're going to go way beyond vanity. I mean, we all want to look good, but we want to talk about why it's really important to keep our skin healthy. Can you share some thoughts with us there?
Yeah. You know, dermatology is one of those fields where, you know, obviously like vanity is like a huge part of what I do on a day-to-day basis, but it really is kind of the window into the body. The skin is our largest organ. It's the organ that we can actually see, right? So, you know, everything kind of ties in to your skin. So skin health really is health. You know, the most important thing you could do is, you know, eat an adequate amount of protein, you know, because that's basically your collagen is protein. You know, everything in your cells require protein. And you know, applying vitamin C is fine, but eating an adequate amount of vitamin C is a hell of a lot better. So skin health really is just health. That's why I love what I do. And I'm sort of what I call myself a holistic dermatologist, you know, because I do talk to my patients about all of that other stuff in their body, their other organ systems. And I talk to them about fitness and nutrition and all of that sort of stuff, because it really ties into your general skin health.
But it's great. You can get them once they're there. You know, they really want to kind of get your attention, trying to get the advice that you have. So when you're sitting with kind of a captive audience, so to speak, whether it's podcast or your patients or just your friends like myself who want to understand, what are some really key practices or key things that people can do to maintain skin health? You've already mentioned a couple. It's really thinking about what you put inside your body. What are some other good things you like to remind people that might seem kind of basic?
Yeah, I mean, listen, the most important thing, honestly, is sunscreen. An SPF 30 that has titanium or zinc in it. I'm a big proponent of mineral-based sunscreens. I don't care if there's a chemical component in it. A lot of sunscreens contain both. But what I tell all my patients is SPF 30 with either titanium or zinc, because those are physical blockers of the sun's rays. So sunscreen is sunscreen. So SPF 30 is great to wear an SPF 30 sunscreen. But if you're going to wear sunscreen, you may as well wear like the best type of sunscreen, which is going to protect your skin, protect your collagen from photoaging, sunspots, blood vessels, you know, large blood vessels, all that sort of stuff, things that happen when the sun beats up on you. So that's by far the single most important thing just for maintaining health of your skin, preventing skin cancer, you know, all that sort of stuff. And then beyond that, you know, moisturizing your skin, you know, that seems very, very basic. But the key, a lot of folks don't know how to do that. Like the key with moisturizing your skin is you have to put moisturizer on skin that's damp. So when you get out of the shower, you just kind of like dab yourself dry, or you can use one of those in-shower oils, you know, while your skin is still wet. And then treating your body well in general, obviously, which we just, you know, we touched upon a bit, is like the single most important thing you can do for any of your organ systems, you know, including your skin.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's so interesting because I know quite a few people that have really, really dry skin, and I am one of them. And so it has been a journey to figure out like, okay, well, how do I keep my skin well moisturized all year round? And thanks to you, I have gotten on that put lotion on your skin when your skin is moist, as opposed to waiting for it to be totally dry. That was a game changer for me. Are there any skincare products or trends that you have seen recently online?
Don't get me started.
I mean, we want them. We want to hear all of it. Let us know the ones that are not worth the hype.
Okay, so anything and everything you see on TikTok, like every single one of my except for my page on TikTok, everyone is doing way too much stuff. Like a lot of my patients will actually come to me with like a Ziploc bag, literally filled with like $1,000 worth of like various serums and skinceuticals products and, you know, all these sort of things that folks buy. It's a very vulnerable population of folks. Like everyone wants to buy that magical eye cream that's like, you know, that's going to make them the under eye bags go away. You know, I can't get rid of mine. No matter what. I've tried them all. None of them work. Really, in terms of products, there's like three things I tell my patients, you know, as for like just like an anti-aging strategy and protecting your skin from, you know, like obviously like prematurely aging, wrinkles, you know, collagen breaking down, that sort of stuff. A titanium or zinc containing SPF 30 sunscreen is the most important thing. Some kind of retinoid. So a prescription retinoid is the best. You can find retinols in like, you know, over-the-counter products or, you know, various serums. But getting a prescription from your dermatologist for like a proper retinoid, like tretinoin, which is just generic Retin A, is the best, in my opinion.
So people might be wondering, what are retinoids anyway? And retinoids are a derivative of vitamin A. So really another way of talking about vitamin A, we think of them as the skin powerhouse. And there are different forms of retinoids, which is where these terms that we've been using, retinol, retinal, might get confusing. Retinol, OL, is an over-the-counter form. So is retinal, AL, also another over-the-counter, but a little stronger. And then anything stronger than that, that is a retinoid, like tretinoin, which require a prescription. And that's the basics. And they help by turning over the cells of the skin. And that's why they're considered the skin powerhouse.
Right. And then the third thing is going to sound crazy. And it's going to sound like I'm nuts, but preventive Botox is the third thing. That's kind of like the pillar of my anti-aging strategies. And what I tell my patients is, if you're doing those three things and you have like resources to spare beyond that, go ahead and buy that vitamin C and E serum or whatever the hell else you want to use. They're not dangerous. They're not harmful products. It's just that's not a good allocation of your initial dollars that you're going to put into your skincare regimen. You know, the three things I mentioned are important, Botox being the least important of the three, but it is, if you know, it helps.
What is the lower limit of an age? Since I'm the internist, I'm going to put the PSA in here for, I imagine you're not seeing 12-year-olds that you're putting preventive Botox into. So what's the age where that regimen should start?
Well, 13. I'm just kidding. So it really depends on your skin type. So for my very fair skin patients that have gotten like really beaten up by the sun and have like lines at rest, some of my patients are actually in their mid-20s where we start to mess around with it. For darker skin folks, like, you know, present company, you know, we start later. So I started doing Botox on myself when I was like 42. I've been doing Botox with my wife since she was 29. I mean, she's married to a dermatologist, but like before our wedding was like the first time she did it. She didn't really need it, but you know, getting married, why not? But I use this example a lot. So in the decade of our 30s, my wife was either pregnant or nursing for like a lot of that decade and couldn't get Botox, right? So say she was able to get Botox like 6 times in that decade and say it doesn't really last 6 months, but for argument's sake, say it lasts 6 months. So for 36 months or 3 years of that 10-year period, she wasn't making wrinkles, right? So like relative to her friends who may not have been getting Botox, she aged 30% less than them. That's kind of how it works. So like for that like 20-something year old, what I say to them is like, listen, like if you get Botox once every 2 years, you know, you'll age 25% less than your friends who aren't getting Botox. Like you don't have to do it on a regular schedule. Sprinkling it in a little bit, you know, is not a bad idea. I'm never pushy about it, obviously, but I just like to present all the options to my patients if they ask me about it.
We're going to take a quick break here. More from Dr. Mudgill in Skin Health when we come back. Welcome back. You're listening to Well Now from Slate. I'm Maya Feller.
And I'm Kavita Patel. We're continuing our conversation with the effervescent Dr. Adarsh Vijay Mudgill about skin health. All right, Adarsh, we have been talking a lot about all the different ingredients and skincare products. Maya and I were talking about just all the different trends. You addressed some of them. Brands overseas, American products. South Korea is getting its fair share and has become a bit of the global standard, wouldn't you say, for skincare products and routines? Would you care to talk about some of the differences and just your take on what we're seeing as even pop-up stores with South Korean skin products just flying off the shelves?
Yeah, I mean, you know, South Korea is like the epicenter of innovation with skin. Listen, I'm not like a huge product guy, to be honest with you, but all the best products, you know, like the fanciest stuff, like the Hermes of skincare products. A lot of it comes from Korea, Japan. Yeah, I'm not like an expert on like the nuances of the products, but skincare products really don't come in many. There's a million different options, but there's like only like a few basic things, right? So there's moisturizer, there's sunscreen, there's like serums, which have like, you know, various ingredients. So some have like retinols in them. Some have like hyaluronic acid. There's not like not a million different things. Most of the stuff, really all of the stuff is kind of BS, you know, to be honest with you. I don't sell products in my office. I do have some products that I'm working on, like in terms of like a line, but it's just like sunscreen, moisturizer, facial cleanser, very basic stuff. Again, like we're talking about the cosmetic stuff, less really is more. And I'm not poo-pooing like all the great products that come out of Korea and like, you know, other places as well. So yeah, if you want to put like gold flakes in your moisturizer and, you know, spend a couple $100, I mean, if you want to spend your money on that, that's fine. But like very inexpensive drugstore brands like CeraVe, like, you know, you can buy a very high quality $10 sunscreen. I mean, there's a million of them. You know, you don't have to buy like a $100 sunscreen, you know, to protect your skin. You know, the $10 version has all the working ingredients. I'll get you to the finish line.
All right. I love that you said that because I do want to talk to you a little bit about sunscreen and skin cancer. So we already know, and this is something that, you know, you've taught me that regardless of how melanated or, you know, not that your skin is, that you need sunscreen. And I think we all need what, like a shot glass for our entire body every 2 hours, something like that.
Yeah.
So, but talk to us a little bit about kind of skin cancer across melanated skin and what you're seeing in your practice.
That's a good question. So this is a little bit controversial, but like darker skin types are just less prone to getting skin cancer. I mean, that's just the bottom line. So when I make a sunscreen recommendation for you, Maya, it's like, hey, you know, it's really kind of a photo aging you know, recommendation. Your like basal cell carcinoma is the most common type of skin cancer. You're knock on wood, like you're not going to get a basal cell carcinoma. You know, it's just it would be literally we'd write a paper about it. You know, like it's that rare. But fair skinned folks are who've had sunburns are at a very high risk. You know, if you had a bunch of sunburns, you know, when you're a kid and you continue not to care for your skin and wear sunscreen and that sort of stuff, you're at a much higher risk, right? So even skin cancer screening recommendations have changed a lot. Like it used to be, okay, get a skin cancer screening every year. Now that's actually not the case. Like, you know, for you, that's not the for me, that's not the recommendation. For Kavitha, that's not the recommendation. It's, hey, if you notice something on your skin you're not sure about, yes, go in and show your dermatologist. But if you're a fair-skinned person or someone who's had sunburn, especially like a blistering sunburn before you were 16, then yes, you need to get a skin cancer screening.
And what about people who are kind of, you know, your tone? Like, for example, my daughter in Florida, our most recent trip, got a blistering sunburn on her cheeks. I was completely surprised, you know, because she's not very dark, but she's not very light. And it was bright red. And then there was tons of peeling before 16. She's 11.
Yeah, so that's a sort of a, you know, that's very nuanced. Mm-hmm. Like for her, I mean, she can see her face if she notices something. So I actually had a very bad sunburn in Texas when I was 9 years old in San Antonio. And I was in, my mom was in the military. I mean, we were there for a week and we were staying in a hotel and I was obsessed with being in the pool. I was in the pool all day and I got like a really, really bad sunburn on my nose. Listen, and again, one sunburn, like, you know, in your lifetime, it's not ideal and it should be avoided if you can, but it does happen sometimes, right? So it really probably very, very, very minimally increases the risk for me for having a sunburn or for your daughter, but like from being like 0.0001 to being like 0.00015.
Right.
But it's folks that get like tons of sunburns and like not even like, you know, their skin turns red every time they're out in the sun.
Yeah.
So that's like the skin cancer stuff. And, you know, the basal cell carcinoma is by far the most common type of skin cancer. Squamous cell carcinoma is pretty far second place. And then melanoma is much, much rarer. For us, darker skin folks, you know, melanoma is actually the most common type of skin cancer that we would get if we were to get it. But like for us, it's like, you know, changing moles on your palms, on your soles, you know, things that just look odd. Mucosal areas, you know, there's people get melanomas in their eyes, you know, which obviously it's very hard to check for, you know, because the folks are not really getting the retinas checked for pigmented lesions all the time. But for fair skin folks, and going back to the sunscreen recommendation, yes, you should wear lots of sunscreen. And this is like what I do for my kids, what I do for myself. I put a titanium or zinc containing sunscreen as my base coat. So I use, you know, there's a million brands out there. For us, you have to find one that blends in well with your skin. So there's like certain brands that brown people can't use because they look like the Tin Man, like if they were to put it on. But there's some that blend in better. So what I do is I put that on as my base coat. Those sunscreens are actually, if you notice, if you put them on, they're hard to wash off. So even like when you take a shower before you go out for dinner that night, you kind of like still see like remnants of it. They stay on pretty good. What I recommend for reapplications is like a chemical-based spray-on sunscreen. Because they're just so easy to put on and you will use it. You may not lather lotion on all over the place, but you pop out of the pool, you dry yourself off, spray yourself, you know, rub it down. You can do that. You know, I do that probably more frequently than every 2 hours, to be honest with you, because I'm jumping in and out of the pool or in the water. When I get out of the water, dry myself off, spray myself down. And I will reapply sunscreen to my face, you know, to where the money is made, you know, the good sunscreen goes on. You know, I put it on more frequently. So like a couple of times a day, I'll use a titanium or zinc containing sunscreen on those areas.
So before we talked a lot about kind of these trends, and it's so funny. So my daughter said to me, she was like, you know, I'm not a Sephora kid. Like I don't go to Sephora and buy all the things, but let me tell you, she hits up Target, she hits up Ulta. So I was like, you may not be a Sephora kid, but you're definitely out there, you know, buying on the stuff, all the things. And they're spending a whole bunch of our money because they don't have jobs. but I've noticed that some of these kids are using products that I guess are not appropriate for them. So like some of these retinols, tell us about the impact of using those types of products in pediatric and growing skin.
The main issue really with those are they're very, very irritating. So, you know, especially like in that demographic, like my daughter has bad eczema, but she likes to like, you know, like she's 16, you know, she likes to mess with all sorts of stuff. Yeah. And she has eczema. So like her skin will literally go haywire sometimes. And especially like that teen demographic who you're already like somewhat acne prone. Like when your skin gets irritated, you get what's called acne mechanica. Like just from the irritation of the skin, you break out even worse, you know? So you're basically like putting gas on the fire. So I don't recommend my patients use anything over the counter that contains a retinoid. Like, I like to be in full control. And some folks can, if they need a retinoid, say they have acne, you don't really need a retinoid unless you have like acne in that age group, right? But if you do and you're using a retinoid, you might only be able to use it like once a week, because it can be so irritating. And it's also not one of those things where you're just like globbing it all over your face. Like, a half a green pea size amount of like a prescription retinoid is enough to cover your entire face. It's like, or a quarter of a green pea size amount. That's how little you really need to be using. The problem with like getting all this over the counter stuff is like, you know, folks are literally just like squirting on their palms and just like slathering all over their face. And there's like no way that you're not going to get irritated using it. That's really the main risk. I mean, it's not like dangerous. It's just not a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Your skin won't be happy.
I feel like I have to cut back on my skincare even more.
Less is more is what I'm taking away.
Less is more.
Again, I'm not the like typical dermatologist, you know, when it comes to this stuff, you know, like I'm definitely a minimalist, even with my own regimen. What I tell all my patients is everything I'm telling you, I'm telling my wife and my daughter and like I do myself. I'm not like, you know, telling you to do things that I wouldn't recommend my own family do.
So this is a good place because let's summarize, kind of walk us through maybe like a very practical, less is more simple. You said it a little bit, but sunscreen.
Yeah, totally.
Do a little bit of the like how to kind of from sun up to sundown. And I'm going to ask you to include, you're going to tell me, I have a gut feeling. I went out and bought a silk pillowcase of ours because I was like, I just love the way it feels. But then it also made me feel like I was taking care of my skin better. And, you know, so maybe you can sneak in a little bit. And, you know, is the silk pillowcase really just to make me feel like a baller or am I actually doing something? Okay.
And Kavita, you know what? Or you could be like me. I wear a silk head tie every night so that whatever's in my hair doesn't get on my
face.
There
we go. See, Dr. Mudgill's like, oh my God, these women. But it's
you guys are just bawling out of bedtime.
It is. I'm going to be honest. Even my husband, who's a doctor also, is like, I'm pretty confident that's not a thing to put skin. he's like, I said, I don't care. I just like the way it feels, but I do think it probably makes my skin somehow better. I don't know. So yeah, go ahead. Sun up, sun down, and maybe even some silk while we're sleeping.
All right. So I'm going to start with the silk. You can totally use a silk pillowcase if you want, but it is definitely not benefiting your skin other than it makes you feel very, very luxurious at night. There's a lot of charlatanism in dermatology. There is literally a S ton of it. And it drives me nuts. They're like, you know, somewhat prominent dermatologists who are like on their Instagram pages, like, oh yeah, you got to use this silk pillow. And like, you know, and God, I like to use a word my kids use. I'm cringing inside. Of it. I just want to like grab through my phone. I'm like, stop.
It's all sus.
It's sus.
Yeah.
It is sus.
It is sus.
And it drives me. And there's so much of that in dermatology.
Yeah.
It just drives me absolutely crazy. So in terms of like a skincare routine, I want to actually start at night.
Okay.
All right. So basically for folks who wear makeup, the first step is, you know, a good cleanser that's going to get your makeup off. I think wipes are amazing for that. So you can literally get wipes, Kirkland wipes from Costco, which are like the knockoff Neutrogena wipes, which work amazingly well. You know, you can just wipe that off or, you know, any kind of facial cleanser. I don't care what you use. If you want to use a fancy like oil-based cleanser, a good facial cleanser, just get everything off your skin. All right. And then it really kind of depends on your skin type at that point. So if you have dry skin, then that's a good time to use a moisturizer. And, you know, I would use, obviously at night when you use a moisturizer that does not have sunscreen in it, because it can be occlusive. You want to just use something that breathes. And then if you're using a retinoid, and then again, this really depends on how sensitive your skin is. So some folks are able to use a retinoid once a week, or, you know, some are able to use it every day. Some folks need to use it on top of their moisturizer. Some folks don't need to do that.
Right.
Okay. So that's nighttime. It's super basic. Wash your face really well. If you need to use a moisturizer, put a moisturizer on and some kind of retinoid as many days a week as you can tolerate it. Then in the morning, same thing. You wash your face with a good cleanser, literally super basic, like Cetaphil or CeraVe or whatever brand you want to use. That doesn't matter. Something super basic. Then you should put a moisturizer with sunscreen on or just sunscreen on. So like sunscreen for me is very moisturizing. So I'll just put SPF 30 that has titanium or zinc. It doesn't have to be SPF 30. It has to be at least SPF 30. and something that has titanium or zinc in it, you have to find one that works well for you. And then for if you're wearing makeup, you put your makeup on top of that. And that's your routine.
Dr. Adarsh Vijay Mudgill is a board-certified dermatologist and dermatopathologist. Thank you so much for joining us on Well Now.
Thank you for having me.
That's Well Now for this week. Our show is produced by Vic Whitley-Berry with help from Mayana Angel. Ben Richmond is Slate's Senior Director of Podcast Operations. And Alicia Montgomery is Vice President of Audio.
If you have something you'd like us to cover, email the show at wellnow@slate.com. And be sure to follow us everywhere you listen to podcasts so you don't miss an episode. Join us next Wednesday for another conversation on health and wellness. I'm Maya Feller.
And I'm Kavita Patel. Thanks for listening.